And we have a change in our program. Dr. Dewey was originally scheduled to deliver this presentation, but she had a family emergency, and Dr. McMahon was kind enough to step in last minute.
So I get a lot of grace for this, okay?
Yes, she does. And our gratitude. You get our gratitude as well. So brief introductions.
Very brief.
Dr. McMahon is the health commissioner for Fort Wayne Allen County. I'm going to skip the rest of your introduction, except to say that Dr. McMahon is the 2014 APHA recipient of the Romer Prize for
Award winner.
That's right. Creative Public Health Work, which recognizes the most creative public health official in the entire nation, and we had the pleasure of having Dr. McMahon with us.
Thank you.
It was brief.
That was brief. That's why, you know, you get introduced sometimes and it sounds like, if I died, is this my obituary? But, you know, I just wonder, I listen to all of this stuff and I just, how did we let this get so far out of control? Are there any doctors and nurses and nurse practitioners? What happened? How did this get so out? Where is Dr. Welby? I mean, I don't know, but I'm going to talk about it, but it's all part of the same theme of I think the medical model for today is got to do my charting. You know, when you're in the room with a patient or you've got the nurse's station, it's, I've got to do my charting, so please stop talking. Neither of us had any financial disclosures. We're in public health, so we have no money. But what we're really going to talk about today is just a brief overview of the scope of the problem. I think everyone's fully aware that opiates are a big issue, some of the outcomes that we're very concerned about, a little bit about who's affected, a little bit about why it's such a problem. The new scary issue of heroin use in our young people is very frightening. And then a few solutions that we've tried in Indiana that I think have been kind of helpful, and certainly hope to learn from others about some other things that we can do, because we have a long way to go with the opiate issue. I just love this. If enough prescription painkillers were prescribed in 2010 in the United States to medicate every American adult around the clock for a month, nobody has that much pain. I mean, this is really frightening to see, and this is part of that new theory of medicine is, I've got to do my charting, so what do you need? You need a prescription for pain medicine. It's so discouraging to see that the United States represents, you know, less than 5% of the world's population, but we're consuming 80% of the prescription opioids. Very frightening. And of course, that leads to some of the outcomes that, again, that we're really trying to change with some of our new policies. I thought this was a particularly eye-opening slide, and I try and use this a lot myself when I do talks about this, because this is looking at the percent change in leading causes of injury death in Indiana over a decade. And what's interesting to me, two things really stand out. One is that we've had a decrease in the number of homicides committed by firearms, but an increase by suicides by firearms. But I think the big thing that you notice here is that we've had a 500% increase in unintentional poisonings, most of them due to opiates. And again, this is just sort of national data when you look at just the unintentional drug overdose deaths over the past 30 years. You see just a huge increase, and it continues to increase. Again, this is in Indiana. We see that same trend here where we see the red line is the unintentional poisoning, the accidental overdoses. We see that, again, continuing to increase. We did a study in our own community. I live in a community of about almost 400,000 people, and we've looked at our accidental drug overdose deaths for the past 5 years, and they've had a huge increase in this. And again, these are people that just took a few extra pills. They weren't planning on not waking up the next day, so it's a big loss. And again, you can see we have a bit more of a problem in Indiana than in the United States, so that was really, it's a big issue for where I live. And according to the CDC, this is when we started seeing, I think it was in 2010 or 2008, when we started seeing that we had more drugs from accidental overdoses than from motor vehicle accidents. And when we did our five-year study in Fort Wayne, Allen County, we found the same thing. We now have more deaths from accidental drug overdoses than we do from motor vehicle accidents. Very upsetting. But of course, there are other adverse outcomes. It's not just the people that die from it. It's, you've got all of the treatment admissions, and this is a very difficult disease, addiction to treat. At least I'm not an expert in addiction, but that's what I hear from our folks. It's very hard. It can be expensive, multiple relapses. You have a lot of emergency room visits for people who are wanting to use or abuse drugs. You have a lot of dependency and, of course, all the issues in the workplace that that causes, and then so many people are non-medical users. And it's not just the opiates. It's also the stimulants, especially in the young population, the college population. They're loving that Adderall. The neonatal abstinence syndrome, again, is another really important issue that we're going to be dealing with, not only now, but in the future, because I think it remains to be seen the long-term impact this is going to have on these children. At our state pediatric hospital, Riley, in the last 5 years, they've had a 1,500% increase in the number of children they're seeing with neonatal abstinence syndrome. So, again, and the problem is a lot of doctors aren't even aware of this. I mean, many primary care doctors and daily practice doctors who do delivery haven't even really heard of this issue. So we got a lot of work to do with this. Who's affected? When we look at the accidental drug poisoning death rates in Indiana in 2012, you can see this is age on the continuum, and you can see that there are more men than women. But this is really kind of an all-age continuum. Maybe the type of drugs that they use are different. When we looked at our own study in Allen County, we found that the 40 and under preferred either the stimulants or the benzos, and it was the 40 and over that really liked their opiates. So a little bit different, and they all like Soma. And marijuana, but you can see really all ages are affected. This is what's so frightening to me, though. In Indiana, you know, the heartland, 21% of our kids, when they were surveyed, had taken prescription drugs for non-prescription reasons. And I think you've all heard of these farm parties they have, where they just put a bunch of meds in a bowl and they take handfuls of them, or they call them Skittles parties, whatever. But the other thing that we're seeing, as I mentioned earlier, is the Adderall and the stimulants. They're combining that with alcohol so they can get drunk longer. Again, we just weren't that bright when I was young. We just didn't know how to party like that. I'm telling you. When we look at the misuse in Indiana in 2013, like I said, the Adderall. The other thing about this, what I hear, I'm an internist by training, so I don't deal with a lot of young people except in our STD clinic. But what a lot of the family practice doctors are saying is that parents are coming to them wanting their kids to get prescriptions for things like Adderall because they think it helps them study better and that they're going to do better and then get it into a better school, which is really frightening to me. And an aside with the stimulants, I think we have a harder sell because it does help you function better. And so it is harder to make that case where you can say with opiates, well, you're going to get addicted and you're going to blah, blah, blah. It's kind of hard to say, well, you know, to compete against something that actually is performing better. So, but anyway, it just shows you that our kids here really like their Adderall, but they also like the Xanax and the Vicodin and all these sorts of things. Why is this such a problem? And I'm just going to take a minute to make an editorial comment here, is that one thing I have learned in medicine and in public health is that human nature is a lot like gravity. It takes the easy way out. And if we have created such a cumbersome system for people to practice medicine that it is really a lot easier for me and the patient to achieve an asymptomatic state versus a healthy state. And we've actually created that expectation in people that, A, pain is the fifth vital sign. Did anyone in here come up with that idea? Good. I think that's the dumbest idea ever. Mental health should be the fifth vital sign, not pain. But, you know, because what you're doing is setting an expectation that people think they're going to be pain-free, and they don't understand why I can't do that. And so what we've really done is really dumbed down the expectations people should have for their own health. And we've created a system that just makes it very hard for us all to achieve that for folks and even set it as an expectation. End of my editorial. But I think the reason why we have such a problem with opiates is there's just so many of them. When you look at how many are being produced, and you know our colleagues in ethics and all of this can tell us, I mean, they just keep making more and more. I mean, how many painkillers do you need to have? What was the new one they just put on the Zohydro? Why did we need that? Who needed another opiate? But yet they passed that through. My dad died waiting for a heart valve that he needed. That couldn't get passed through. But we got another pain reliever on the market. It's crazy. We got too many drugs. And again, is it any wonder that as you sell more, you're going to have more deaths and more folks into treatment? I don't think this is really hard to predict. When you look at the amount of prescriptions, hey, painkillers sold by state for 10,000, I'm embarrassed. I mean, I'm there in the dark green. That's ridiculous in Indiana. And the problem is a lot of these people, when you look at the death rates, you know, obviously if you're selling more of these painkillers, you're going to have higher death rates. But it's not even just the death rates. These people are going to work. a lot of these people are employed. Can you imagine the loss of productivity, the risk on the workplace? I mean, the stats, when you look at that, for these people that are actually showing up to work, it's scary. And again, we are never in Indiana in the top 10. And when number one's good, we're right close. If number one's good, we're way at the bottom. And here you can see we're number 9 in terms of prescriptions being written. So we have a lot of work to do. Where do they get these drugs? From family and friends for free. Some of them, their friends and family charge them, but for many of them, they get them free, which just shows you there's too much. I mean, when you go to the ER, I've actually seen my patients in follow-up. They've gone to the ER for a sore throat and they end up with Vicodin. I mean, really? Or you go to the dentist and you have a wisdom tooth and they give you 30 Vicodin? I mean, you don't need all of that. But see, then you have the problem is the drug company charges you an extra fee if you give them 5, and if they need more, you give them another prescription, they have to pay more. So it's the system is fighting itself in terms of us being able to give good care. But they're getting them from friends and families, or they're going into grandma's medicine chest when grandpa died and he's still got his opiates in there, they're taking them. People go into open houses. I don't know if you've heard about this, but in the real estate thing, they'll go to these open houses and you know, act like they're looking at the house, and what they're really doing is going through the medicine cabinets trying to find opiates. I mean, desperate people do desperate things. And this slide just really talks about where we said that 54% of the people who are taking them for non-prescription reasons are getting them from family and friends, but those people are getting them from one doctor. So it's not like the pill mills are the biggest source of this problem. I think primary care, essentially, is where a lot of this over-prescribing is occurring. And that's what you see with this slide here, the immediate release and the extended release. What you really see is that primary care were the top 2 prescribers for both, and then the dentist and the emergency rooms were the top prescribers for the immediate release. But I think, you know, pain isn't what? 60% of people going to a doctor's office have pain of some sort. And so it makes sense that primary care is going to be prescribing a lot of these medicines if they don't have a lot of other options. And so the whole question that we faced in Indiana was, we're treating people, yes. We're using aggressive opioids and some interventional technologies and all this stuff. But have we really seen the outcomes, a lot like what we're seeing with the pharmaceutical manufacturing? Are we seeing the outcomes that make all this worth it? And we're thinking not. Just a minute about a scary new problem, because I don't want this to get ahead of us like the prescription drug thing. We should have seen this prescription drug thing long and started working on it long before we did. And I don't want this to happen with the heroin. It's interesting, the monkey on my back, that was an article or a magazine published in 1954. It's the same monkey, but it's just been tweaked. Now they're adding fentanyl. You don't have to inject it anymore. You can snort it and sniff it. So a lot of young kids think, well, I'm not a junkie because you don't see me shooting up. I'm just snorting it. It's very cheap. It's a lot cheaper than opioids. So it's an old problem, but the new twist has made it even scarier. And the CDC has, and I'm sure you've all heard this recently, are very concerned about the increase in heroin deaths from 2010 to 2011, the largest annual percentage increase since 1999. And even in my community, heroin is becoming so chic. Young people are using it. And the way these pushers hook these people, that's an old term, hook, but the way they get them addicted is they give it to them free for a few weeks. And because now they're mixing it with things like fentanyl and other substances, it's so much more addictive that after a couple of weeks, these kids are really addicted to this and are, you know, now another statistic. So again, heroin, I think, is something we need to pay attention to. And even in Indiana, when we look at the number of deaths with heroin as contributing cause, you can see just a marked increase in the last few years. Another editorial comment I'll make is when we did our study on accidental overdose deaths, we partnered with our residency program and our research consortium, but also with our coroners. And the coroners, at least in Indiana, do not have a consistent way of identifying people who died of a heroin death. The labs are a little tricky in being able to, depending on the timing, be able to determine if heroin was actually used. And so they're relying a lot on the scene. Well, as I mentioned, you aren't using the needles and stuff and the tourniquets and all that stuff anymore. So I'm afraid we're really underestimating the people that are dying of heroin because there's not a consistent way for a coroner to do an evaluation for that. So I think that's something where, again, public health can come in, help create sort of a consistent approach for them to use. And again, this just shows why people are choosing heroin. When we started making them the opiates tamper-proof and they're so much more expensive. You can $30 can buy one oxycodone in New York City, but six hits of heroin. You can see why people are going to it. They used to think that the opiates were kind of the gateway. You know, people would start on those, and then it would get harder to get, so then they switched to heroin. What we're seeing in our community is kids are going right to heroin. So again, this is a very, very tricky issue. And again, just looking at all of the heroin deaths, you know, over the past 5 years, you can just see that it's our, again, our young people that, you know, in their prime. I mean, 30s were your best years, you know. 40s, you're starting to get a little tired. 50, you're really tired. So, I mean, this is happening in their prime. And so we don't want that to happen. We got to help these kids. So some potential solutions, and I'll go through these pretty quickly. We have a great attorney general who realized this was a problem and started a task force. Dr. Doobie, who was supposed to be here today, is the co-chair of that. I was asked to be part of the education subcommittee, and they actually had a number of subcommittees that working at the same time, the education group, the monitoring or the inspect group, the prescription drug monitoring system, looking at proper medication disposal, enforcement, really looking at better ways to eliminate the pill mills, and then treatment and recovery. So these were all working simultaneously. And one of the big things they really did was start awareness, because most people are just not aware what a huge problem this is. Some of the accomplishments to date, boy, like herding cats, Oslam was on the education committee with me, and we had a very nice, diverse group of folks, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, public health folks, from throughout the state working together to identify a set of guidelines that we could come together with and put into a toolkit to help doctors, because so much has changed over the past decade, and we wanted doctors to have ready access to evidence-based recommendations. Well, you would think that'd be simple, but it was actually quite, it took us quite a while to do that, but we finally came up with a provider toolkit that I think is actually pretty user-friendly. Everything you need to do any kind of screening for mental health, opiate addiction, templates of everything, you could just go on this website and just download it and make it your own. So much so that that was actually used as the basis for the new prescribing rule that our legislator came forward with, legislators and our medical licensing board came forward with last year, and I think it's really been very helpful. All right, got to keep going. Our bitterpill.gov, this is our recommendations. I just want to say two things that we really got a lot of pushback on our rules was one that one of the rules is that when you hit the dose of 60 milliequivalents a day, you got to bring the patient back in and rethink your strategies. And a lot of people thought, well, and just make sure that you really want to go on this. And people thought we were being very arbitrary, but it's really because that's where when the accidental drugs really, deaths really start increasing. Urine drug monitoring, a lot of doctors were against that, but once they started doing it, I've heard, I can't tell you how many doctors have told me, I can't believe that my little old lady was actually diverting her drugs. They're so shocked by this because they think they can really tell whether somebody's going to be diverting or not. And as you and I both know, no, can't tell that. They've developed a committee to really start educating and doing a better job dealing with neonatal abstinence syndrome. Our inspect, we finally got funding for it, which is amazing. Take back, we're starting to be able to do a better job of having a continuous way for people to drop off these medications. Enforcement, doing a better job with that. And in treatment and recovery, I think this is where we really need to work on this because not a lot of doctors are going into addiction fellowships. We're having a real trouble with that. And then hooking up primary care with addictions specialists, at least in Indiana, has been very difficult, and that's where our education committee is going in the next phase. Has it worked? So far, we're prescribing fewer prescriptions, so that's a good thing, but I think certainly we'll see more in the long run. Interesting, the pharmacies are reporting a financial loss due to 50% decrease in opioid treatment prescribed, so they're not happy. One of the things we have to work on is that patient satisfaction. You know, if you turn people away, and if you start practicing like a professional, you're not, you know, telling people they're fat, you're not going to get it really nice, or that you're a bit addicted to drugs, you're probably not going to get the best, I'm going to have to go through all this. You're probably not going to get the best patient satisfaction survey, so I think we need to rethink that. We need to get rid of that pain is the fifth vital sign thing, too. And we need to expand formularies, especially Medicaid formularies, because they're really forcing doctors to use things like methadone and things like that. So in summary, opiates are a big problem in Indiana and everywhere. The root causes are multiple, include both prescriber behaviors, really doing a poor job at diagnosing mental health conditions and addiction potential. And we really need to have collaborative and integrative approaches again. We need to be a united front, mom and dad. We need to be pharmacy, hospital administration, physicians, and mental health practitioners kind of all working together. We certainly have a long way to go. I did it.